They'll teach you history, yeah. But they'll teach you
what
they'll
what
teach
they
you,
want you to yeah. think.
What they want you to think is,
and none of it has ever been true.
I apologize in advance, but you're gonna just have to deal with the sounds in my home until I get a better situation, which I think I'll have by this summer, but I digress. So let's get into this. Professor Randy Trahan, and he has 9 problems with critical race theory, and I want to point out some things about the way he addresses it. Because in order to understand critical race theory, you have to understand the reason, the need for something like critical race theory in the first place, which oftentimes gets omitted from these kinds of discussions. And it's not just when it comes to critical race theory. It comes along with any critique of American society, specifically when it comes to race. There is almost always an omission of the society that, you know, white, male, Protestant, rich people have created, and the problems that it has caused, the lasting problems, in fact, that it has caused. And they seem to be very hyperbolic about any change to that, about how destructive it will be when you come with another solution or suggestion. That it will be just devastating to us, as if what they were already doing is not devastating enough. Somehow or another, we're still here, so it must be all good.
Especially in the church today, who have gotten turned on to some degree to critical race theory, and they're trying to hold on to their Christian worldview as they start to embrace this critical race theory worldview. What's going to happen, and we've seen this happen with a number of theologians already, is they're going to recognize eventually that there is some conflict.
Comment on him either thinking that you cannot be simultaneously Christian and into critical race theory, because either he thinks or he realizes that Christianity has roots in colonialism and colonization, that's why a lot of people are Christian, or like just fundamentally somehow Christianity is not viable or cohesive with critical race theory, which I don't see, but I mean, whatever, I guess.
I'll have to choose. And what we see is a significant number choosing critical race theory, critical theory generally, and abandoning traditional Christianity. What I'd like to do now is to discuss with you some of the problems with critical race theory, at least problems from the standpoint of folks like me and others. And I'd like to divide my discussion into 2 parts. First of all, I want to consider the problems that are a concern from the standpoint of our culture, our civilization as a whole. In other words, problems that should be of concern to anyone and everyone, regardless whether they're Christians. And then second, problems that are of concern or should be of concern to Christians, and more specifically to evangelical Protestant Christians. So let's begin with part 1. From the standpoint of our culture, our society, maybe even our civilization as a whole, what is problematic about critical race theory? Well, I can think of at least 3 things. The first problem is that critical race theory at some level, like all critical theory.
The first problem is that you've got a Haitian flag on your desk, sir. What is that doing there? Please don't tell me he's Haitian. Please. Oh man, it's even worse. He's got a Haitian wife or something. Please leave Haiti alone. Why is that flag there?
Something of an attack on what I'd call rationality itself. Remember the rejection of the notion of objectivity. Remember also the insistence upon alternative ways of knowing, alternative epistemologies. And not just alternatives, but ways of knowing that supposedly are superior to what has, in Western thought, traditionally been thought of as the best, if not the only way of knowing. That is, you know, lived experience as opposed to logic, rationality, and testing and evidence. And this strikes me as being a significant problem in our culture for the same reason that Neil Shinvey's identified. And I want to quote what he's written here. Because of this aspect of the theory, when someone makes a truth claim, the first question asked by critical theory is not, is this claim true, but what incentives does this person have to make this claim? What political or social or economic agenda motivates his statement? How does the statement function to preserve his power and privilege? Now, as Shinvey points out, this kind of move in the face of a truth claim is actually a kind of recognized logical fallacy in itself. It's called bulwarism by C.S. Lewis. It's a kind of genetic fallacy. It rejects something as false simply because of the assumed motives of the person making the claim. I think that's a very dangerous idea, because again, it undermines the very foundations of what we in Western culture have historically understood is the very way, the best way, maybe even the only way of developing knowledge. And if that way of developing knowledge is compromised, then the repercussions for the future development of knowledge, or at least the development of knowledge in this way, I think could be seriously undermined with all kinds of unfortunate cultural and indeed civilizational effects. The second problem with critical race theory, and indeed all of critical theory from the standpoint of the culture of the civilization as a whole, is closely related to the first, and that is that it stifles free intellectual inquiry. Again, from Neil Shinvey, if a person making the truth claim belongs to an oppressor group, then the response from critical theory is, of course they would say that. They're just trying to maintain their power and privilege. If the statement is made by the truth claim by a member of the oppressed group, then the answer is, well, he's just speaking from internalized oppression. The subordinate individual has internalized and accepted the claims of the dominant group. Well, you can see that what this does is to shut.
I don't really trust that he's quoting this person in good faith. So I would say that he probably didn't say that in response to anyone asking any kind of question, but probably just something sort of obvious or a tone-deaf thing to ask, like a white person asking, you know, for some sort of racial education from the first black person they meet rather than finding easily accessible information on these things. Or, you know, even a person of color saying something, you know, stereotypical about their own race. Something that, you know, most people can easily recognize as racist. So it just seems like he's representing him in bad faith, which is honestly very annoying. If you're going to do a critique of it, I feel like you should be able to do one that's, you know, like if you have a meaningful critique, you don't have to strawman or show someone not even in the full light of truth. So,
further discussion of whatever issue has been raised. And it shuts it down because, again, immediately the person who is speaking saying, well, I don't see that there's a problem or that problem is not true with respect to me. His motivations are immediately questioned, and the motivations having been questioned and having been not just questioned but explained away by this ready-made theory, oh, he's simply speaking from a desire to maintain his oppression or from his, if he's an oppressed person, his false consciousness, immediately puts that person on the defensive and, for the most part, will, in many cases, just shut him down. Again, is used to describe this phenomenon is fragility. It is said by the adherents of critical theory that whenever a person in an oppressor group, in response to some charge having to do with his person in an by the puts oppressed person not immediately quite true.
Okay, I had to rewind that just to hear it over again.
Is speaking, saying, well, I don't see that there's a problem or that problem is not true with respect to me. His motivations are immediately questioned and the motivations having been questioned.
I think it is useful, especially for people of color, but anyone getting into CRT and decolonization, all those things, to learn that the first thing you should question about someone is their motivations. You know, when the colonizers came to the Native Americans, obviously that's something they didn't do, because unfortunately that's something you shouldn't have to do. It's something that colonization has forced you to do. They come there, they're like, oh my god, look at these people we can easily enslave, and look at all the resources they have. But the Native Americans looked at them as just, you know, oh my god, new people, they stink and they're dirty, but wow, they're new people. And even now, you'll see a lot of white people who, whether to themselves, they're actually coming in good faith, and they're like, no, I just genuinely have this question of, and then putting that labor on a person of color, or just saying, but not actually being in good faith. It's like, no, let's like actually open up a discourse about why I should be able to say the N-word, you know? It's helpful to question people's intentions a lot of the time.
Not just question, but explained away by this ready-made theory. Oh, he's simply speaking from a desire to maintain his oppression, or from his, if he's an oppressed person, his false consciousness, immediately puts that person on the defensive, and for the most part, will in many cases just shut him down. Again, another term that is used to describe this phenomenon is fragility. It is said by the adherents of critical theory that whenever a person in an oppressor group, in response to some charge having to do with his group's oppression, says, oh, no, I don't think there's any oppression going on, or it certainly isn't true of me, that simply shows his supposed fragility. Fragility at what? Really, at some subconscious level at least, recognizing that there is some truth to the claim that racism or sexism is really going on here, but him putting himself into this defensive posture, denying that it is. Again, if that is going to be the kind of response that a critical theorist or a critical race theorist gives to someone who disagrees with him, okay, the person on the other
sad
side.
That he perfectly
is not
explained
going to...
the reaction that is white fragility, but then put the onus on a person of color or anyone who's trying to hold someone accountable, a white person accountable. They're like, this is an actual response. It does stem from this person actually realizing that white supremacy and all of its oppressions and intersections is an issue, and I am somehow benefiting from it or contributing to it, but that's not my fault. That's your fault for making me own up to that, for making me see that, and you're making me uncomfortable right now. That's just really sad. I thought he was going to somehow say that white fragility isn't real, or that, you know, in some way that it's not even white fragility, it's just, you know, normal fragility. But no, he just says that it's whoever is holding me accountable, that's their fault that I had this reaction.
In most cases, be willing, would you, to continue the discussion. And so again, the effect is that further debate and therefore further inquiry with a view to getting the truth is actually shut down, almost as it were, by assumptions in advance. The third problem with critical race theory in particular, not just critical theory generally, but critical race theory from the standpoint of the culture as a whole, is that it has the effect, or can have the effect, of diverting attention away from what I and many others believe are the true causes of the social pathologies that we see within the black community in the United States and maybe even elsewhere throughout the West. This theory provides an explanation of why it is that blacks lag behind whites and Asians as well in so many categories of social, political, and economic performance. Why they're blacks have higher poverty rates, why it is that they have higher rates of crime and incarceration. The theory says it's all because of oppressive social structures. And implicitly what the theory says is this is all happening due to circumstances that are beyond the control of those to whom it happens. Well, I don't want to get into this very deeply, but I happen to be persuaded, as are many others, including a number of black intellectuals, Thomas Sowell is one of them, noted economist, Vodi Bauckham, noted theologian and pastor, that at least many of the problems that beset the black community in the United States are what we would call cultural or maybe subcultural.
There it is. That's why I wanted to let him finish to see what his justification would be. Ew. First of all, there should have been a trigger warning for when he said
blacks.
Very uncomfortable. Oh my God. I love the it's just their culture argument as if it's so much better and just like so much more sophisticated than the just race realism. Like, it's just because they're black. No, it's because of black culture. Okay, where does black culture come from? Black people. What's inherently wrong about black people that we come up with a culture that is toxic to ourselves? Oh, there's never a good reason for it. And the fact that it makes more sense to someone that, which is not to take away from the fact that culture is cultivated by one's environment. So a lot of the things about black culture is definitely formed by our history and by our circumstances, with most black people being poor, most black people being segregated. It does have to do with all of that, but they're acting as if, you know, black culture or anyone's culture is so far removed from that person. It's just a longer-winded way of blaming black people for their own problems. When it's very clear that, you know, first of all, we're here in the first place because of slavery and colonization. Then you impoverish us, segregate us, make it so that we don't have easy access to education or to jobs, then discriminate against us in those fields. So I will never understand why that makes more sense unless you're just a white supremacist, I suppose.
Practices and values within the community that are themselves self-defeating. The one that Vodi Bauckham focuses on is the crisis of fatherlessness in the African-American community. Well, these are problems that at least to some degree can be combated only by making a change of culture, shall we say. But here's the thing. As Vodi Bauckham correctly points out, if you subscribe to critical race theory, that possibility never occurs to you. The solution to the problem is to change the social structures. And until that gets changed, no improvement will be seen. And so focusing on that instead of on this other cause, I'm not saying these cultural problems are the only causes of pathologies in the African-American community, but I think they're there. And critical race theory has the effect of taking our attention off of them and onto this other thing, the supposed oppression, with the result that I think these underlying problems that could be developed by a change of culture are not going to get addressed.
Now you would say, okay, well, if black culture is holding black people back, why are there some black people who can succeed, who have succeeded and do succeed? They'll just tell you, well, they left behind black culture. They overcame black culture. Some of them might even say that they've adopted other cultures, saying that clearly most white people just have this inherent culture that is so much better than all other cultures, but that's completely removed from white supremacy. That has nothing to do with white supremacy. It just so happens all other non-white cultures are inferior. You could attribute it to black people who have succeeded adopting white culture or adopting Asian culture. And also what he said about black fatherlessness. You know, a culture is defined as the customs, arts, social institutions, and achievements of a particular nation, people, or other social group. Is it a custom amongst black people that, now that we've had a baby, me, a black woman, and you, a black man, you must leave now. This is the custom of our people. I don't understand why this makes sense to them. This entire video will just confuse me.
Problems with critical race theory from the standpoint of the culture, the civilization as a whole. I now want to focus in on what I consider to be the problems of critical race theory for Christianity, and more specifically for evangelical Christianity. Critical theory as a whole, of which critical race theory is a part, functions not only as a theory and not only as an agenda for political action, it functions as what we might call a worldview, or what Thomas Sowell calls a vision, or what the postmodernists call a meta-narrative. That is, it's a whole way of looking at reality. And it's a way of looking at reality that is presupposed and is brought to the experience of encountering reality. What does a worldview or a meta-narrative do for you? Well, it's what answers the most fundamental questions of life. Who are we? What is our fundamental problem, if any, as human beings? What's the solution to that problem? What is our principal moral duty? What is our purpose in life? Well, here's the troubling thing. If you compare the Christian worldview, and there is such a thing, because Christianity is not just a faith or religion, if you want to use that term, it is also a whole way of looking at the entirety of reality. If you contrast the Christian worldview with the critical theory worldview, you see that there are a number of points at which they don't line up. In fact, you see some points at which they are quite different. We consider the Christian worldview's answer to these questions. Who are we? We're beings that were created by God, by a holy, just, all-powerful creator. What's our fundamental problem? We rebelled against him. Sin. What's the solution to the problem? God sent Jesus to die an atoning death on the cross to pay the sin debt that we couldn't pay, to fix the rebellion, reconcile us to God. What's our primary moral duty? To love God, glorify Him. What's our purpose? To glorify God. Now, contrast that set of answers to these fundamental questions that are provided by the Christian worldview with the answers to the same questions, if there are any, that are provided by the worldview that is a part of critical theory. There is, first of all, no answer to the question, really, who are we? At least not in the sense of where did we come from. To the extent that there's an answer to the question of who are we, the answer is that we are members of different kinds of social identity groups. Where they came from is not necessarily explained. There is no creator in the background. Okay, so what is our principal problem? Our principal problem is the oppression that takes place between social identity groups. In particular, the problem is the adverse effects that the oppression has on the oppressed. What's the solution? Well, the solution is various kinds of activism.
Political. Okay, I was going to let him finish, but this man talks kind of slow, and I'm not going to let him go through all the points before I address the first one. I think it is just so rude, and you could say a little bit racist, honestly, that he thinks, you know, fighting against white supremacy is just inherently adverse to and does not align with at all being a Christian. One, he has, I'm sure he's in his own sect of Christianity or denomination and he has his own views. I don't like, and I'm not Christian, but I feel like another Christian also would not like that he's just generalizing all Christians together and that they all have the same views and the same way that they look at life. One, we know by a few studies that have been done that in the most tangible way that you could try to measure someone's faith, Black people are considered the most religious group in America, who is also the one constantly at the head of all of these social movements. Black people, in a lot of ways, our Christianity and our faith and the way that we practice Christianity and Christian faith informs our social movements and vice versa. But to his first point, who are we? No answer, because there is no creator. We are members of different social identity groups. They have no real origins. That have no real origins. Critical race theory is not inherently atheist. I'm not sure where he's getting this from. I could be wrong, but I'm, you know, like 99% sure critical race theory is not inherently atheist. No one ever really talks about God. We do talk about, or they, you know, the theorists talk about the effect that colonization and Christianity has on oppressed peoples. But there is no, you can't believe in Christianity if you want to do this or if you are a person of color. There's none of that. What's our problem? The oppression that takes place between such... Yeah, I don't see how that's, you know, there are some Black people who would say that that is still our problem, that we sinned, and white people are one of those who sinned because they chose to oppress other peoples. Like, that's one way of looking at it, but I don't see how they're so just incompatible with each other.
But also social and even economic. What is our primary moral duty? It is to overthrow the hegemonic power with a view of liberating the oppressed. What's the purpose in life? It is to work for the liberation of all oppressed peoples. Notice that...
Okay, he says one more interesting thing here that I have to address. So, you will notice that in white supremacy, there is a lot of, there is either or, there is no fluidity. You either glorify God, or you fight for the oppression, for oppressed peoples, and to fight their oppression. There is no, I also glorify God, and you know, in that way, I also fight for oppressed peoples, as if God would not find that glorifying. I don't know. But you'll see that there is always a black and white way, or white over black way of looking at things. The white is glorify God. The black is fighting for oppressed peoples. If you're doing that, you're not standing with God. You're not glorifying Him. You're not a real Christian.
Fundamental questions right? That a worldview takes on. The Christian worldview and the critical theory worldview provide very different answers. And like others, including Neil Shinvey, I'm very concerned that there are lots of folks, especially in the church today, who have gotten turned on to some degree to critical race theory. And they're trying to hold on to their Christian worldview as they start to embrace this critical race theory worldview. And what's going to happen, and we've seen this happen with a number of theologians already, is they're going to recognize eventually that there is some conflict between the two, and they'll have to choose. And what we see is a significant number choosing critical race theory or critical theory generally and abandoning traditional Christianity. All right, the second problem with the critical race theory and critical theory generally from the standpoint of evangelical Christianity has to do with epistemology, again, which is means theory of knowing or how it is that we know. This is a problem that I touched on when I was talking about the problems with critical race theory or critical theory from the standpoint of the culture and the civilization as a whole, right? Remember what we said there. There's a rejection of traditional rationality, of traditional logic, a rejection of the very idea that there might be objective truth. That is a problem, as I indicated before, for the culture of the civilization as a whole, but I submit to you that it's also a particular problem for the church. Why? Because Christianity teaches that there is an objective truth. Yes? There is an objective truth about who we are. There is an objective truth about where we've come from. And how do we get to that objective truth? We get to that objective truth by looking at, because we're Protestants, the Scriptures. And we say that the Scriptures are, at least we're Orthodox Protestants, we say that they are infallible, yes, inerrant. What does that mean? It means that we're talking about objective truth that is true for everybody, everywhere, and importantly, everybody, regardless of what social identity group he might be a part of. This objective truth that we find in the Bible, it doesn't sit very well with critical theory. Whenever someone from an oppressor group makes some kind of theological claim, it's the tendency of critical theory to respond by saying, well, that's not because it's really true, it's because, again, of what? You're trying to maintain your privilege. And again, if it's an oppressed person who makes this traditional theological claim, the response can be, well, that's the result of your internalized oppression of your false consciousness. And what
so
about?
So this I don't really understand. I also don't see how this is not cohesive. You would say, a Christian would say, that the Scriptures of the Bible are inerrant and infallible, which is fine, because God wrote them, or, you know, through God somebody wrote them, and God is perfect. So I don't see why, but like in the Bible you have false prophets. Why can you not interpret someone, a white person for instance, who would try to come to you falsely, lie to you, and say, no, I'm genuinely asking the question, why can't I this? Is it because I'm white and you're just racist? I don't see why that person isn't a false prophet. I don't see why Jesse Lee Peterson isn't a false prophet when he says, you know, blacks are this and blacks are that. I don't see why, you know, if someone presents something to you as true, it doesn't mean that it is. He's trying to say that, like, humans aren't inerrant or infallible. I don't understand that part.
Having to do with women. Well, the reason that you say that women can't be pastors is, again, a reflection of your patriarchal mindset. And maybe from there we go farther. Well, aren't gay and lesbian and transgender people oppressed? Yes, they are. So whenever it is stated that homosexual conduct is a sin, how do we know that that's really true? Instead, it may simply be your privilege talking, if you're a member of the oppressor group, or your false consciousness, if you're a member of the oppressed group. So the bottom line here, and if I can sum this up under the heading of epistemology, is the rejection of objective truth that is knowable not only, shall we say, to an oppressed person, but also to an oppressor, is very, very difficult to line up with some of the fundamental premises of critical race theory. Another problem with critical race theory has to do with its tendency to create adversarial identities. Remember what we said at the very beginning of our examination of the key elements of critical theory, and that was that it indicates that identity, even at the individual level, individual's identity is determined by, shaped by, what social identity group he's a part of. And so, again, critical race theory posits that human beings are in some way fundamentally different. They're either in this social identity group, oppressor, or they're in that social identity group.
Let me just rewind this real quick, because he says something here that I just want to hear over again, and then I will speak on.
Another problem with critical race theory has to do with its tendency to create adversarial identities. Remember what we said at the very beginning of our examination of the key elements of critical theory, and that was that it indicates that identity, even at the individual level, individual's identity is determined by, shaped by, what social identity group he's a part of. And so, again, critical race theory posits that human beings are in some way fundamentally different. They're either in this social identity group, oppressor, or they're in that social identity group, oppressed. Now, if you have some contrary notion that at some fundamental level, human beings are in fact not different, but that they're very much alike, that there is, in other words, an identity.
That's what I wanted to speak on. He posits this thing about adversarial identities, which I've never heard framed that way, but I guess. I suppose he means the oppressed and then the oppressor dynamic. But anyways, where he says that CRT is the ideology or theory that posits that we are fundamentally different as humans, when that is the whole point of colonization. When white supremacy is what told us that as black people, we are all the same, but then you as a white person, me as a black person, we are fundamentally different, and that our race is what defines us, or any other oppression, like being trans, being gay, being poor. And that's something that will always really aggravate me when racist people try to say something like that, which is like almost blame anti-racist for recognizing our racist systems and going, well, no, you're the racist. I don't see color. When we are the ones pushing for all of us to just be treated equally. We are the ones saying there shouldn't be poverty. No one should be treated because of how they look or how they choose to identify or who they choose to sleep with, because it's none of our business. That's just something that really aggravates me. And he's about to say something else that I want to speak
on. Is fundamentally at odds with what is taught by critical race theory. Now let's consider Orthodox Protestant theology. What does it say about humankind? It says that humankind does in fact share an identity that is independent of these social identity groups. We share, first of all, an identity in terms of the fact that we were created by God in His image. Everyone, oppressors and oppressed. Second,
okay, I just need to make this second point. Whether or not you are a Christian and whether or not that informs your CRT, your anti-racism, at the center of critical race theory, always at the center of fighting anti-blackness, is seeing all people as humans and loving black people, which is why you hate anti-blackness. And something that I repeat to people a lot, and that I've heard other people say constantly, is to please love black people more than you like to get in debates with racists, or love black people, love trans people, love gay people more than you love to shout, oh my God, Black Lives Matter, or, you know, use it as an aesthetic. All of these things are wonderful to do anti-racism work, but show black people love, show all people love, which is what we're really fighting for and what we believe that all people deserve. It is white supremacy that said that we're not all human, first of all, and that because of that, we're fundamentally different.
Fallen, or rebels, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, not just the oppressors, but also the oppressed. And then at least for those of us who are Christians, we also share an identity in terms of being redeemed, yes? Of having our sin problem being fixed. And that is something that is available to oppressors, as well as the oppressed. Yes, as Paul said, in Jesus Christ there is no Jew nor Greek, male nor female, slave nor
so
free.
So here I feel like he's just proving the point of why Christianity is not adverse to CRT. He uses a quote from the Bible, there is neither Jew nor Greek, female, there is neither slave nor free, there is no free. Male and female. For you are all one in Christ Jesus. So why then do you still see an institution that would discriminate against black people as still Christian or worthy in the eyes of God? Why do you still see a person, or a man, a white person, for instance, who says that that black person over there is not a man, he's not allowed near me, my children, in my institutions? Why is he a good Christian when he's very clearly going against something that obviously God is clearly stating he's against?
Theology does teach that there is a fundamental identity, actually multiple fundamental identities among people, even of different social identity groups. And again, that is that identity there is sort of primordial from the standpoint of traditional Christian theology, which of course focuses on the redemptive work of Christ. Another problem with critical race theory and critical theory generally from the standpoint of evangelicalism is this whole notion of hegemonic power. In critical race theory, as in every other version of neo-Marxism going all the way back to Gramsci, hegemonic power is something awful. It is something to be resisted. It is something that is somehow illegitimate. Well, how do we square that with the Bible? I'm not talking about what the Bible has to say about social, political, economic power. I'm digging a little bit more deeply here, just as Neil Shinvey has. What about God Himself? Is it not true that God is described as a hegemonic power? That He is sovereign?
No, I have to stop him right there. One, I dislike anyone who would use their religion or try to speak for other people and then use their religion to justify their own bigoted beliefs. If you believe in hegemonic power because you're weird like that, please don't try to tie it to other Christians or any other religious group. But secondly, God isn't human. There is no other God. There is the one God in the Bible, and He is not, He's an entity. He has no end, He has no beginning, He has no race. He has no, well, you could say He has no gender, although He is gendered in the Bible. And I'm gendering Him right now. But how are you comparing God to people? The whole premise in the Bible is that as humans, we are inferior to God because we're humans, but we're trying to get up there to the heaven, the pearly gates. But also, why would you want hegemonic power amongst human beings? Because now you're comparing us, now you're comparing humans to God. If God is inerrant, infallible, this wonderful deity who's not human, why would you then go, there are some humans who are apparently godlike and thereby deserve hegemonic power over some people? I don't like that he keeps comparing gods to humans. It's so aggravating because he's trying to be so by the book and so scriptural, and in that way is being hypocritical.
Eventually, every knee will bow and every tongue confess. Yes. The story, as Neil Shinvey correctly says, of the Bible from the beginning to the end is about God's hegemony over man. If your worldview is such that you consider hegemony to be a bad thing in itself, then have you not rejected, at least implicitly, a fundamental aspect of traditional Christian theology?
Okay, I'm just going to make this really quick point also. I don't know how many Christians would agree with affirming that God is a hegemonic power. There, what he said right there is, you know, we trust God, we bow to God, we glorify Him, or Christians do, really. I keep saying we because I am religious, just not Christian. But he says all that and then says, how can we have a problem with hegemony? However, one would follow God because you feel He is more knowledgeable than you. God knows what is to come and what has already passed, you know? He's omniscient, He's omnipotent, He's infallible. Like, how could you question a power like that? I don't think it's a hegemonic thing or it's just like, you are inferior to me, but literally that I just have more knowledge than you. I have something to teach you. Because you wouldn't feel like that, you know, if you are a master of your field and you have students. You know, there is no I am just inherently better than you. It's just that I have something to teach you. And therefore I do, you know, deserve some of your respect. And I do, and you should humble yourself a little bit around me. But there is no inherently I am just better than you and you are trash. So that's why I don't think that one would describe it as hegemonic, because here I pulled up the definition, leadership or dominance, especially by one country or social group. Okay, so I suppose you could describe it as hegemonic, but not in the connotation that he tries to give it. I feel like he's saying he's trying to conflate the hegemony, quote unquote, of God over man, when it's just you know, following him because you believe him to be true and you believe him to have your best interests at heart, but then trying to compare that to any hegemony within the human race. First of all, we already know that humans are flawed, according to the Bible. But secondly, we understand, at least most of us understand, I hope, oppression is wrong, and there is no reason for a white man to say, I am the hegemonic power over this black man because I'm white, and that's the only reason I need.
Another problem. It's what I'm going to call the unpardonable sin. In the works of the really dyed-in-the-wool critical theorists, in particular critical race theorists, there seems to be some suggestion that racism is something that no white person can possibly escape from, at least in the society as it exists now. Remember that critical race theory has a rather different conception of racism and of oppression than has been traditionally the case, and that is that it's all systemic, yes? The social structures are in place in such a way as to oppress. If you're a member of the oppressor group, simply by being there in the culture, you are a participant in it and a facilitator of it. To that extent, even if you have no individual hostile animus in your heart of hearts, you're still a racist or a sexist, as the case might be.
Well, so, again, one, I don't like his framing or understanding of CRT and looking at all oppressions as intersecting as a new thing. One, white supremacists understood that. They understood we don't like black people, and who we don't like even more is a black woman or a gay black woman or a trans gay black woman or a disabled gay black woman. Like, they are the ones who made up this hierarchy of systems. They understood it before anyone else. And secondly, as a trans, disabled, gay, black woman, you understand how you are oppressed and that there is a system of oppressions working against you. So acting like it's a new thing, honestly just shows that he's probably lived in a bubble for most of his life. You could say that there is a new awareness of CRT, which I would agree with, but just generalizing the whole thing as being new, I would say is wrong. Secondly, his point on unpardonable racism, or saying that just racism is inherent to every white person and there is no forgiveness to you, one, that's what I would say is the meaningful distinction between being an ally and being in solidarity with groups. There is obviously fragility, entitlement, all of these ways of being socialized for white people, but the whole point is we are working towards decolonization. And that's not going to come from white people, but it's definitely not going to come from them working against us. We want white people to be educated about these things, but we don't need them to give us our freedom. And we don't think that racism is unpardonable, because we understand that they are socialized to believe this way. Now, I'm not saying, you know, all white supremacists, all black people should be buddy-buddy with white supremacists, but when someone is uneducated and is brought to a new education or a new light to something, of course there is forgiveness for that person. We understand fundamentally that racism is taught because it benefits white people and white supremacy for white people to be blind to how they are complicit.
You suggest that in the society and as it exists now, before the appropriate correctives have come into play, whatever they may be, it's impossible for a white person to escape racism, no matter what he might do. This is at some level so mind-boggling. Even if he does what is generally prescribed, that is, not challenge the lived experience of members of the express groups whenever they explain it, but instead, you know, listens to them and says, okay, you told me that you feel oppressed by this or you feel discriminated against here. I have to accept that as true. Well, some of the theorists are so radical that they say even in this very act, the white person is acting as a racist. How? He's guilty of epistemic exploitation. Meaning what? That is one way to express it, but the more common way is epistemic appropriation. Why? He has now put his hands on this knowledge that supposedly is unique to the oppressed person. And in that way, even by trying to be non-racist, has ended up being inadvertently racist.
Okay, so no. First of all, this man keeps using these big words that I don't think he understands. So he brings up epistemic exploitation, which right now I had to look at the definition. It's defined by or as epistemic exploitation occurs when privileged persons compel marginalized persons to produce an education or explanation about the nature of oppression. The way he framed this hypothetical situation is that an oppressed person was talking about their experience and a white person was like, okay, I hear you understand this, that's cool. Now, it is true that if you as a white person come to people of color and you're like, tell me how you're oppressed right now, then that's aggressive and it is racist because you shouldn't expect that labor of people of color. But if we're freely educating you, then there's nothing wrong with it. And, you know, we would say that it's wrong to try and, like, disturb us so that we can give you the chronicles of racism we've experienced in our life is because, one, that information is readily available. You don't need to find some person of color on the street and be like, please educate me. And two, like, you don't need to constantly engage with these experiences of people of color, because it could cross over into you just having a love for hearing about people of color's trauma. But then also, I would say it's often more helpful to just educate yourself about the systems of oppression. Because I think as a white person, you will confuse yourself if that's all you're getting is just experiences, when you will not understand how these experiences relate to systems of power.
This idea that there is some kind of sin that can never be escaped. There is a notion of the unpardonable sin in the scriptures, and it's reflected in traditional theology, but we know it has nothing to do with this. There's a problem, a disconnect here between the Christian worldview and the worldview of critical legal theory. And then finally, one last problem I want to talk about with critical race theory and critical theory generally from the standpoint of evangelicalism, is the moral asymmetry that it gives rise to. It is said, according to the critical race theorists, that there might be some things that are immoral for a member of the oppressor group, but not immoral for a member of the oppressed group. The most salient example that we see around us today has to do with racism in particular. It is claimed by the critical race theorists, at least some of them, that non-whites are, by definition, incapable of racism. This is in part because of the way that racism has been.
I already know what he's about to say here. This man talks very slowly, so I will not let him ramble on. He's talking about moral asymmetry, which is, there are some things that the same act a white person could do, it's immoral. If a person of color did it, it's moral, or at least has no moral application or moral label. One, yes, that's true. I wouldn't necessarily talk about morality, more so just, I guess, the impact of harm that it has. But yeah, like a white body doing something will have a different effect than a brown person doing something because of white supremacy. When a white person engages in a marginalized culture because they feel like it, and it's not something they're educated on, and it's not something that's even their culture they have any ties to, it's very different than an Indian person practicing their own culture. But then two, he says here, where he tries to compare it to God or to Christianity, and he almost refutes his own point by saying that, for instance, comparing it to Christianity and why it's not comparable with Christianity is that we're all equal according to God. However, when God wipes out the firstborn children of all of the Egyptians because he will not set the Israelites free, would it be moral if a man did that? No, because it's God. But secondly, you cannot compare the two to each other. One is an entity, all-knowing, omnipotent, and infallible, inerrant, so literally anything God did couldn't be wrong by definition, according to man, who is apparently inherently flawed. And then trying to compare that dynamic of God over man to white over black, or just racism within the human race.
For a member of the oppressed group. The most salient example that we see around us today has to do with racism in particular. It is claimed by the critical race theorists, at least some of them, that non-whites are, by definition, incapable of rise to. It is said, according to the critical race theorists, that there might be some things that are immoral for a member of the oppressor group, but not immoral for a member of the oppressed group. The most salient example that we see around us today has to do with racism in particular. It is claimed by the critical race theorists, at least some of them, that non-whites are, by definition, capable of racism. This is in part because of the way that racism has been redescribed as not just an attempt or a desire to oppress, but also power to do so. It's said that the non-whites do not have this power, therefore they cannot possibly be racist. And what that opens the door to is not just the possibility, but the reality, because we see it everywhere, of people in the non-white groups making statements about whites as a whole or individual rights, that if you turn them around and refocus them on blacks or whoever, non-whites, would be completely unacceptable. It's okay for blacks, for example, to say the most horrible things about whites as a whole. Can they be saved? They need to be imprisoned. They need to be even exterminated. And then also, we've seen instances of blacks, including some who claim to be Christians, saying the most dreadful things about individual.
So again, it's interesting that he, I guess, says, apparently it's implied by him making this video, that he has an understanding of CRT, but doesn't seem to understand the difference between, you know, personal prejudice or personal bigotry and racism.
The definition always used for racism within CRT is systemic racism, institutional racism. Racism that discriminates against people of color within institutions. The system that makes it so black men are arrested at the highest rate make up the biggest prison population compared to other races. That is not comparable to God. God is not part of this system where there are many other gods and then there are humans. Like, God is his own race and then there's the human race, and he says no, this and that. One, I would not say that they're comparable at all, and I keep having to repeat this, because God is not a human. Inherently in the Bible, God is amazing and perfect, and humans are they're imperfect, and the whole thing that we're striving towards is to be perfect, but in death. So it's annoying that he keeps comparing the two.
Turn them around would sound racist. But the response from the critical race theorist people is it's not really racist and therefore not really sinful, because again, the people making the statements are in the oppressed group instead of the oppressor group. But from the standpoint of traditional Christian moral theology, this is a very problematic idea. And that's because in traditional Christian moral theology, the norms that are established are universal. They apply to everybody, not just to the oppressors, but also to the oppressed. Indeed, if you think about the commands that God gives, for the most part, they're not even addressed to different kinds of groups. There are exceptions.
So, once again, he says something that is not comparable to the Bible or to God, because God doesn't speak about racism in that way. God is not here like, you know, one, do not do murder, do not worship idols, and also don't be racist towards black people or don't uphold white supremacy. That's not anywhere in the Bible where he specifically speaks on this. So, there is nowhere in the Bible where God is specifically saying, you know, when white people do something like this, it's wrong. But when a person of color does it, it's fine. It's A-okay. He keeps conflating institutional racism with everyday racism. No person who practices CRT or is a theorist would say that a black person is incapable of having personal bigotry. You can be bigoted towards white people. You can be bigoted towards Asian people, towards Native American people. In fact, that's encouraged under white supremacy, to not unite with other oppressed or marginalized peoples and to see everyone as fundamentally different and somehow inferior. You know, black people way at the bottom, and then you have the hierarchy of browns until it gets up to white.
Husbands, directions for wives, but for the most part, the directives are addressed to all Christians or to all faithful, whoever they might be, whether it's the Jews in the Old Testament or Christians in the
New Testament. I also meant to mention that he says there are, and another reason why critical race theory and Christianity can be cohesive, he says that there are universal truths for, according to Christians, all humans. There are very specific universal truths within the Bible that are nowhere, that are not adverse to things under white supremacy or things in CRT. God says all humans are imperfect and it's wrong to do murder and it's wrong to cheat on your wife. In what way does that correlate to it's wrong to call a black person the N-word? Like, these universal truths, or it's wrong to enslave somebody, it's wrong to hate crime someone. In no way do these clash with each other. They're all truths, but just one of them isn't in the Bible and one is.
In those instances in which the Bible does give directives to particular groups, something else that's worth noting is that what is commanded at a bare minimum is mutual respect and deference. The Bible does recognize that people who have authority can possibly wield it in poor ways, but the Bible never rejects authority in itself. In fact, if we think specifically about political authority, which is very much a concern of critical race theory, what the scripture says is that this authority is established by God himself. So, again, what we, the message that we get from the scriptures when it comes to moral theology is that what is, shall I say, sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. That there are no situations in which it's okay for one person to engage in behavior that for another would be considered immoral or sinful. So if I can wrap this up here, I'm finished going through the various items of collision between the Christian worldview and the worldview that's associated with critical race theory. Again, there are just a number of points of not just mismatch, but fundamental disagreement. And that it should be a concern to every Christian today as we witness this growth of interest in and promotion of critical race theory. At the end of the day, it is an alien worldview that threatens the possibility of supplanting the Christian worldview. These then are the points of disconnect between traditional evangelical Christianity on the one hand and critical race theory on the other. Again, worldview, epistemology, adversarial identities, hegemonic power, unpardonable sin of racism and moral asymmetry. When you consider these points of disconnect, I think you have to recognize that in fact, critical race theory and Christianity not only are incompatible, but that critical race theory poses a genuine threat to Orthodox evangelical Protestantism.
So finally at the end, does he say what, for whatever reason, he wouldn't say through the whole thing, generalizing all Christians when really he means his specific view of Christianity, what he describes as Protestant, Orthodox, and evangelical. But also, you could say white, because I know a lot of black anti-racist Christians are going to have a problem with this. There is no incompatibility with recognizing racism, the effects of Christianity as well in colonization, and also being a Christian. Like, one, he's assuming that all Christians completely follow the Bible. I'm not saying, I'm not a Christian, but I'm not saying it's wrong to not or to completely follow the Bible, but there are definitely people who don't practice it that way, because religion is not this, uniform thing. But then also, none of what he said really clashes with critical race theory. Fighting for oppressed groups, I feel like God has probably said it in the Bible somewhere that that's pretty cool to not like oppression. And one, critical race theory being inherently atheistic, really not sure where he got that from, but I mean, who knows how many CRT theorists are Christian or religious. I'm religious and I practice CRT. But also him constantly comparing, you know, the dynamics of God or a God with humanity, specifically the Christian God, versus racism. It's so strange, and honestly, I feel like it shows a little bit of his own internalized racism of always comparing things in a black and white way, or always comparing, you know, people of color as God and then white people who are just these inferior, feeble Lilliputians. For instance, him saying that, you know, racism is irredeemable. There is no forgiving you for your racisms, or for understanding that you can learn from your racisms. Honestly, a very Christian way of looking at things, a very, white supremacist way of looking at things. In the Old Testament, your sins weren't going to be forgiven. There's going to be no forgiveness for you. For if anything, I'd say that in that way, it really aligns with Christianity, because CRT understands that, for instance, if you didn't know that Christianity existed, you're not going to go to hell. If you didn't know that something was racist, we're not going to send you to hell. You will be forgiven for these things. Because ultimately, what he seems to not understand is the fundamentals of CRT, is that we want to return to the belief that we're just all humans, and that it's none of our business what you choose to do with another person, how you choose to express yourself, what tribe you belong to. What if when he sees me, I like him and he knows it? What if he opens up a door and I can't close it? I'm such a good singer. Let's find another one. Oh. This is a present for you, Daddy. You'll find it while you're editing. You're welcome. Oh, I hope this isn't too hard to edit out. I'm sorry. Can you just, like, delete this?
Man, I'm just out here being...
Yeah.
I'm sure they would have done something
I'm being black.
Beautiful with that.
And now...
And everything just...
I'm sure they would have done
everything that it means to be black.